Here we are. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Vox Pop. We've been having too much fun talking to each other. I don't know whether I got caught saying anything I shouldn't have been saying. No, says Zach. Thank goodness. So, it's the Copyright Forum, Paul Rapp, an intellectual property lawyer and writer in the Berkshires. He represents musicians, of which he is one, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues and used to write a column for Metroland before it went away. Bill Westwood.
It's probably his fault.
He's one of the country's leading medical illustrators. You've all heard of Westwood the Satellite. That's his company, and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Most people think that Bill Westwood, seriously, is the best medical illustrator in the country. Polly Law is an artist and illustrator. She runs an art studio, maintains a website at buttonwoodart.com, and is about to give a show, I hear.
A solo show.
Down in Soho.
Down in Soho.
Yeah, Soho.
Wow.
Soho.
Yeah. That's big.
Yes, yeah. It is.
That's
I'm terrified.
Great.
That's awesome.
Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Phones are already substantially ringing. As I said before in the opening, you may not call and ask if whether you mail yourself something that automatically copyrights it, because it doesn't. Just take it from me. It doesn't.
Somebody's still going to call.
No matter what your cousin told you, you know, or your Uncle Larry. Okay. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wmc.org/VoxPop. You can also comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WMC Radio. Or you can tweet your questions and comments at WMC Radio using the hashtag Vox Pop. But this is the most important one. This is the one that I would do. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. See? That's what you can do. Anyway, thanks for being here, gang.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. And so first, we'll take the first call. We always take them in order, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Unless we have really good reason to think somebody is clearly insane from the little yellow page. But almost never happens.
That never happens with our callers.
No.
Yeah.
No. Do not. Okay, here we go. Anthony from Troy. Are you there, Anthony?
I am here.
Okay. Uh-oh, you don't sound happy.
You made the cut, Anthony. You're not crazy.
Wow, thanks. Do I need the radio on, or should I just...
No, leave the radio off. That's a very good point you're making. You should be listening in the phone. Let me tell you why. There's a 7-second delay between being on the air, just in case somebody says something bad. There's a red button over here.
What if I swear in Italian? You won't know.
No, believe me, I'll red button it.
Okay.
Having returned from Florence, in my trip to Florence, don't you know? Go ahead, Anthony. You're on.
All right, my first question is, if you are a member of ASCAP or BMI, and you register your songs with ASCAP, even though they don't ask for a recording, just the title, and there's a little box there that says copyright pending, is that good enough to protect your songs?
It's not as good as registering your copyright. And registering your copyright is the gold standard, and it's something you should do if you're going to be releasing your song. And it's not the same thing to register with ASCAP. Registering with ASCAP or BMI just... provides you the opportunity to get royalties paid to you for public performances of the song.
And if your work was infringed, you still would have to register with the Copyright Office before you could initiate a legal action.
Right.
Okay. Second question is, if you do register with the Copyright Office, which I have done, I know it's like $35, maybe it's $50 a song now, but if you put it under a title, for example, March 2016 Songs, is there a limit to how many songs you could put under there so you just pay one price?
Right. No.
If they haven't been published prior to the registration?
Nope, they have not been published.
You know, gang away.
Yeah, you can put an unlimited number. I just did a bunch of photographs, probably 600 on one application. Okay. And it was, you know, $55 for 600 copyrights, which is pretty great.
Just make sure that you keep a list of what is in that bundle.
I was just going to ask you, they don't ask you for each individual song, correct? They just ask you for the title. I just give the title. But they don't want to know song one is called this, song two, song three.
Well, what I've been doing lately, and this was pursuant to a letter I got from them, is when you register, you have the title of the entire work. So you would say March Collection, blah, blah, blah. But then you also have the opportunity to put in the individual names of the songs.
Oh, you do?
Okay. Yeah. And I think it's contents, something like that. It's a category, and you just list all the names of the songs, and then that will come out on your copyright certificate, so you actually have proof. So you don't have this kind of collection, but what's in the collection, and who knows?
I've done that, Paul. You know, but I've registered by title, you know, like March 2016. But they've never ever, when I get the certificate, list my songs.
Right. You have to input it.
Yeah.
You do? Okay.
Yeah.
You have to do the recordings. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Anthony, you're not going to like what I have to say next, but there are five people behind you, and we're going to let you go. Thank you very much for your call.
Thanks,
Thank
Anthony.
You.
Yeah, bye. And we'll go to Robert in Colony. Robert, you're on.
Hi. My phone reception isn't great, so I'll ask the question and then listen on the radio, hopefully.
No, don't do that, because we may have a follow-up. We may need information. Go ahead.
Sure. Quote-unquote hypothetical, right?
Right. And
say I submit a sign, well, you know, an image to a sign company to make me a sign,
mm-hmm.
right, that I created on my own. Can they then submit a rendering that with, you know, the registered trademark symbol underneath it as their own work when it was a reproduction of mine?
No.
No.
No, it's your work, so they've... I mean, is this something that you use as a trademark, or is it, you know, this...
I just created it for business.
Mm-hmm. So it's for a trademark.
And contacted them to make me a sign with what I created.
Yes.
And
the
rendering shows, you know, the little registered trademark symbol, I believe it is.
And it's for somebody else. It's not for you.
No, it is for me.
Oh, okay. Well, the little R in a circle. You really should be registered. Your trademark should be registered either with the state or with the federal government in order to use the R in a circle. But if you're using the R in a circle and you're not registered, I don't think anybody's going to put you in jail. But it
mostly just serves as a notice to people who might look at what you've done and say, "Oh, that's nice. I'll use it." Yeah. And they see the R in the circle, and they go, "Oh, I can't."
Yeah, and the alternative, you know, if you haven't bothered to register your trademark, if you just put a little TM next to it, that works too.
Hmm. Anyway, Robert, thank you for calling. Sure. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
good luck.
Yeah. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And we will go to Nicholas in Watervliet. Okay. Nicholas, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So my question is, if I wanted to put a picture up on social media, like Facebook, for example, and I wanted to put like Ted Cruz on there and put a side-by-side with him and someone from history, like Richard Henry Pratt, would I get in trouble for that?
That's editorial.
Yeah, everybody does it. You know, yeah. I mean, you might technically be stepping on someone's copyright, but on social media, it's really okay. I mean, it's just like everybody else does. I saw Ted Cruz with like the monster from a Bambi movie or a Barbie movie, a Mattel Barbie movie, and they look exactly the same.
I've seen him compared to the guy that played
Eddie
the
Munster.
Uncle. on the Munsters.
But, okay, so I can get away with pretty much anything.
That's what you heard from Lawyer Paul. However, I want to point out, do you know what the initials HLW stands for?
No, I do not.
Me neither. No. Heavy famous last words. Heavy meaning, you know, we used to say that at Camp Bronx House, heavy last word. Anyway, got it. Okay, thanks a lot. Bye.
All right, thank you.
We'll go to Russell in Clifton Park. Okay, Russell, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen and ladies. How are you?
Good.
Well,
I had an issue with my domain where someone stole the domain or actually registered it in their name before letting me know they had done that, even though I paid for it. I have since registered trademarked my company name, which is also the domain name. Can they do anything with it other than shut it down if we get angry at each other?
Who did this? Did your ISP do this?
No, a supplier of mine who helped me get into business selling their product.
And do you have any kind of an agreement with them to use that domain? Can you buy it from them?
No, actually, the initial agreement in my, I pay them $5,000. They help me set up a website. They give me pictures, information about the products, and help me set up the website. I paid for the domain name. I generated the domain name. I have an invoice paying for the domain name, but they registered it to themselves.
Huh. And who's, are they using it now?
No, it's mine. It still directs to me. We're still doing business with each other.
Oh.
Have you talked to them about this?
I have.
And their response?
Adamantly against giving it to me.
Does the domain name involve their trademark at all?
No.
I personally would talk to an attorney.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a breach of contract issue, although the fact that you still are able to use it and have control over your website makes it kind of less of an emergency. It's not like somebody just pirated it and started, posting stuff about you that's untrue.
Yeah, but
correct.
They're
one of my two main suppliers.
And if
we both know they have it. We both know where I'm not happy about it. I still sell almost $1 million a year of their products. I don't see them writing me off. I can't write them off yet.
Right.
But my fear is one day we have an argument.
Yeah, or you decide to go with another supplier, and then they can cut off the access to the website.
Yeah.
But you can also, if you speak to an attorney, I think you could also begin to apply a little bit of additional leverage by, it doesn't have to be all-out war, but it could be an attorney perhaps sitting down with them and saying, look, what you've done is not right here, blah, 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 blah. It may be a breach of contract issue. Let's talk about this and keep it amicable, but let's resolve it.
Yeah, it's not really a copyright issue. It's
a domain ownership issue.
Yeah.
And, you can bring an ICANN proceeding, which is expensive to get the ownership of the domain awarded to you, because it sounds like you definitely are more entitled to it than your supplier is. But that's expensive and cumbersome, and again, you'll be kind of declaring war on your supplier, and maybe you don't want to do that.
Right. That's where I'm at.
Hmm.
Well, that's why I would speak to an attorney, but keep it low key. Maybe if the attorney agrees, call a meeting, sit down with the three of you in a room, and try to work it out.
What do you think you're really losing by keeping it the way it is?
You're not losing anything at the moment, but you're, as Polly pointed out, you're running a huge risk if there should be a falling out between this gentleman and his supplier.
Yeah, suddenly the website will disappear.
Yeah.
Well, it gets a little bit more involved. I found this out about 5 years ago, and when I realized there was nothing I could do and they were my only supplier at the time, I decided to develop a relationship with another supplier that does something similar but not the same. I now have two separate domain names, one with their product, another one with the other company's product. So I'm covering my tracks since then.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now in a better position. I wouldn't be put out of business if we have an argument, but it wouldn't be a great thing.
Yeah.
Right.
All five phones, Russell, all five phones are ringing. We're going to let you go. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Bye. Good luck, Russell.
We'll take a very fast break. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from the Arthur Zenkel Music Center at Skidmore College, a cultural resource for the upstate region, providing a teaching, recording, and performance venue with rental options available. skidmore.edu/ZANKEL. Coldham and Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture designed for resilience and renewability. Design for the next 100 years. CNHArchitects.com. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. And Tom McRae, Edward Jones Financial Advisor on University Drive, Amherst, Massachusetts, member SIPC. Edward Jones, making sense of investing. EdwardJones.com/Tom McRae.
We're back, I hope. Okay, thank you, Zachary, for reminding us why we're here, having such a good time. Okay, so look, a couple of emails. I had an article published by an online company which closed in 2014. They mention works revert back to the writer, me. However, a couple of weeks ago, I Googled the article and came up on someone else's site as being a contributor instead of my name. Did I lose my rights on the piece?
No. You were the original writer. The copyrights belong to you. And you should get that taken down.
You should assert your rights. Again, perhaps individually. If that doesn't work, then again, get an attorney involved.
So how do you do it? You call them or?
I think the site that it's posted on will probably have in its terms of service somewhere ways to give them a takedown notice for an infringing post and just go through that process and get it taken down.
Paul in Woodstock writes, now that the files can make their first appearance online where they are automatically date stamped, wouldn't it make sense to accept prior online appearance as proof of authorship? This could be true for anything, music, writing, pictures, ... I suppose dates could be falsified, but it would be easy to imagine a site like the Copyright Office where files could be directed and could be called up in the future if there's a disputed claim.
Well, that supposes that the Copyright Office has the wherewithal and the ability to archive every single item that's ever been deposited with them for registration.
They're working on it.
But they have a large backlog to go through. And it also, in a way, I think this goes back to what you said we're not allowed to talk about, which is the poor man's copyright, that if you just prove that you did it on such a date, that it's the same as registration. And that's not true.
That's right.
What do you mean? After all these years of your telling me you can't do that, you're now telling me you can do
no,
that?
No, we're saying you can't.
No, you can't. That's simply another version of the poor man's copyright, saying, you know, the fact that you can prove that the article or that the artwork or whatever it is originated with you
is worthless.
Almost irrelevant. What's important is that if somebody infringes your work, that you have options for stopping that infringement, for going after that infringement.
That have some teeth.
And the way you do that is you've registered that work with the Copyright Office.
Yeah. Sure. And I think the Writers Guild does have exactly what you're talking about. You can put in treatments for TV shows and scripts and stuff, and they will keep it and archive when they got it, because especially in television,
sure,
you know, there's always the idea for a show, who came up with it first and all that.
Sure.
So the Authors Guild does do that. And in terms of music, I mean, if you put your music up on iTunes, it will be noted the date you did it. And so, you know, that kind of functions that way as well.
Okay.
Yeah, but it doesn't function as registration.
Certainly doesn't.
Okay, here we go. Mitch in Albany. Mitch, you're on.
I occasionally buy bundles of domain names, and I've wound up with a few that are trademarked or would otherwise be if the company had purchased them. And I'm wondering, they seem to be very restricted. I can't get rid of them. I can't do anything with them. What's the reasoning behind protecting those when the companies holding the trademarks were not motivated to own them in the first place?
Because they could own them, you know, if they wanted to. And for you to use them in any way, it would be trademark infringement because they already have the trademark. So, you know, there's sort of a limited number of things. I've been involved in a couple of disputes lately with people that just own, you know, a .com of a client's name, and they refuse to give them up, or they ask for $5,000, and we've brought the ICANN proceeding, the administrative proceeding to get the domain back, and it costs a couple of grand to do. And so, you know, from your perspective, you know, you probably won't get more than a couple of grand for these if you wanted to sell them to the trademark owner, because that would be their price of going to the ICANN organization and get them back.
All right, and there's really not much else you can do with them once you've got them.
Not really. If it's a existing trademark, anything you do with it would potentially be trademark infringement.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Mitch. All right, let's go to Colleen in New Paltz. Colleen, you're on.
Oh, hi, yes. I'm asking a question about use of bits of song lyrics in fiction. Like, let's say you write a story, the character's singing along to the radio, and then they sing a bit of a song lyric. And how do you go about, can you do that in a fiction piece, or do you have to get permission from the Library of Congress?
I think you would want to get permission not from the Library of Congress. You need to get permission from the author.
Mm-mm.
No?
Oh, from the author. You have to find out who the song is registered with, like BMI or ASCAP?
I think it depends on how you use it. You know, if you have a character singing, you know, if the lyric is part of the narrative, is driving the story, that's going to be fair use. That's transformative.
Oh, it is?
I wouldn't think so.
But... If you use a snippet of lyrics at the beginning, like Stephen King does.
Like an epigraph.
Yeah, something you should get permission for.
No, the character's singing along to the radio in the car, and so as emphasis in the scene in the car, the character's singing really loud.
Yeah, and I think that would be fair use, and you can go ahead, as long as the character doesn't sing the entire song.
The character was singing Shaboom, Shaboom.
Yeah.
Downtown.
Oh, yeah, well, Downtown. Oh, yeah. Sure. Okay, listen.
Just like three, even three lines.
Yeah, I think you're fine.
Great question, Colleen. Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you.
Okay, let's go to Alex in Catskill. Okay, go.
Hey, so I recorded a song a few weeks ago following the Iowa primary for Bernie Sanders called Hold Me Closer, Bernie Sanders. It was a take on Tiny Dancer by Elton John. We put a video together for it. We recorded it, wrote it, put
you,
a video
you
together
did that?
For it.
You did?
Yeah, the band was called Pundit, P-U-N-N-E-D.
Because that was brilliant. That was just brilliant. I didn't know somebody local did that. Congratulations.
Well, yeah, we recorded it here in Catskill. We had it up online for 3 days. We got to 48,000 views, and it got taken down by Universal Music Publishing on a copyright claim. And this was the next morning we saw on USA Today that Elton John was headlining a fundraising concert for Hillary with Katy Perry. It was just interesting timing, but it didn't get taken down. We uploaded it on iTunes and Bandcamp as well.
Uh-huh.
And it hasn't been taken down in either of those places. And we're just wondering about what grounds we have under the parody laws. You know, we wrote and recorded our own version. We didn't use any part of the recording or their lyrics.
So basically you took the melody and
right.
Boy.
And the trade dress for it, too, in a way.
Well, not really, because they had their own video.
Well, but the culture behind it.
It's really close to being fair use, and I think you could make all kinds of arguments to being fair use. The problem is on YouTube, they've got these automated bots that go around and recognize melodies, and then take it down automatically, which is why it's down there, but it's still up on Bandcamp and iTunes where they don't do that.
So you don't think Elton John said take this off?
No. Okay. And Elton John probably doesn't even, it's Universal Publishing, it's the publishing company.
The court said parodies were
Yeah, okay. Parodies are allowed.
But you have to prove it's a parody. That's the problem.
Yeah, and YouTube will say we don't want to get involved in intellectual property disputes. I would do a counterclaim on, you can protest the takedown on YouTube. I would try that and just say this is so clearly a parody that that it should stay up and see how that flies. You know,
right?
I would get my hopes up, but
and I would find that we're
Yeah, I would find somewhere else to post it, too, because it was really great.
Yeah, see, Paul was one of the 48,000 who listened to it.
Yeah, right. I think maybe on Vimeo they don't have such the same thing. The follow-up maybe that I have is that we're hesitant to maybe fight back at the moment because two of the people involved in the project are in a cover band, which is basically their livelihood.
Uh-huh.
And what they're worrying about is, like, incurring the wrath of Universal Music Publishing, who roots into their other work and sees that, you know, they're making money off of doing covers live.
Well, they couldn't stop that even if they wanted to.
The cover band isn't doing anything illegal.
Yeah. The cover band, I mean, Universal's getting paid by ASCAP and BMI for when the cover band performs these songs live. So they couldn't stop them, you know, even if they were really mad.
So when the cover band plays a song that belongs to somebody else, how do we know that these groups are getting their money?
You take it on faith that ASCAP and BMI are doing their job, which is a huge leap of faith, but
yeah,
it's
right.
You know, they that's what they're supposed to be doing. And
really,
songwriters do get a lot of money from. I mean, they distribute billions of dollars of royalties a year. Whether they're sending it to the right people or not is a good question. Their algorithms are all confidential.
So you have a band, right, Paul?
Mm-hmm.
So do you report to ASCAP or BMI?
We get checks, you know, modest checks, you know, a couple of times a year.
No, I'm not talking about what you get. I'm talking about what you give. I mean, how do you...
Do you do any covers, in other words?
Yeah, you do covers, and do you pay into the pool?
No. I mean, the venue pays ASCAP and BMI.
Oh, the venue is responsible.
The musicians don't.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
So. No, that's it.
Okay. Hey, Alex, got to let you go. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Right. All right. Let's go to David in Troy. All right. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. David in Troy, go.
Good afternoon. A few questions about copywriting a book. I have an unpublished manuscript, 99% complete. And I'm wondering, first of all, can one copyright a title before the book is published or before it's submitted? As I understand it, the Copyright Office needs a copy of a book in order to complete the copyright. And yet I'm also told that because of security reasons, sometimes packages with books in them sit down in security areas for months and months at a time. And I don't know if one can submit a manuscript online or not.
Oh, yeah, you can submit a PDF. In fact, that's the preferred way of doing it, and it's cheaper now if you do it that way.
And you can't copyright a title. You can't register a title anyway.
Yeah, you can't submit just
the
title.
It's a part of the package of the book.
Yes.
Right.
If it's submitted, if the book is essentially complete or a manuscript before it's actually turned into a book, and it's submitted for copyright, does that work? And do then any minor edits that follow have any effect on the effectiveness of the copyright?
No.
Not really. No.
If they're minor, if they're more than minor, I would re-register it as a derivative.
Yeah.
So basically, it's kind of a simultaneous thing. You either get the book published or publish it yourself, and at the same time submit for copyright.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what is it? It's about $100 or something?
Yeah. 55.
It's either 35 or 55, depending on...
Right.
So don't send hard copy. Do it online with PDF.
No.
Right.
They really don't want hard copies of anything anymore.
Well, I'd like hard copies.
Well, when they, you know, starting in the 1980s, you used to be able to go to the dumpsters behind the Library of Congress and
I just thought there was some question about submitting manuscripts online these days, but I'll have to go back and refresh my memory. I was on the copyright site, and there was a lot of material there and a lot of references and links, so it was a little bit confusing.
And one other thing, David, if you don't submit online, but do mail something in. Send it FedEx, because the FedEx packages go through pretty quickly, and they don't sit down in the mailroom for days.
Yeah,
gotcha.
And your registration is considered effective unless the office rejects it, but it's considered effective from the date you mail it.
And this would all include any photographs or illustrations that are a part of the book.
Yes.
Right.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the information.
Thank you. Okay. How do you do this? Oh, yeah, off. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Marie in Albany. Welcome, Marie.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, I help young filmmakers make short animated films, and I was approached by a young filmmaker that told me that his screenplay was based on a song. Now, the screenplay has no mention of the song in it. It does not use the song in the screenplay. But if you know what song it's based on, it's kind of witty. And what he was asking me is, one, is, well, what I said to him is this an infringement on intellectual property? And two, can we say at the end of the film, inspired by, and then the name of the song, or will that get us in trouble? I'm in my car, so I'm going to be quiet now.
No, don't be quiet. All right. Go ahead.
Oh. I guess it depends how elaborate the song is. I mean, most songs don't have, you know, it's boy meet girl, boy falls in love with girl, boy breaks up with girl.
But if it's illustrating the song,
I think that it's not illustrating the song. In other words, the song storyline has very little to do with how the screenplay turned out. It really is more like, when I hear this song, it inspired this story, and this is the story I hear whenever I hear this song. It really isn't the song. And that's why I was confused as well.
I think that's going to be okay. And, yeah. And I don't think you really give up much by saying it was inspired by the song either.
Right. Yeah.
You don't. No. You don't red flag it in some way.
No.
You can't inspire it.
Without seeing it, I have a hard time giving you a definitive answer. But it sounds, you know, if they come after you for that, they're just big bullies.
That's similar, I think, to the thing that some authors are doing nowadays to kind of puff up their websites. They produce listening lists, you know, the music they listened to while they were writing.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah, it is like that. That's a good point. Mm.
Well.
I think.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, I think
thank
you'd
you
be
so
fine,
much.
Marie.
Paul Westwood. This is terrible.
You're close.
Bill Westwood says he thinks you're okay.
You're close.
There we go. Now, we will go to Teresa in Schenectady. No, we won't. We'll take a short break, and we'll be right back with Teresa.
Support for WAMC comes from NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. Interim Healthcare, celebrating 45 years in home care, supports the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy's annual spring meeting, celebrating 24 years of Capital Region land conservation. MohawkHudson.org/tickets. Union College Concert Series presenting the Abend String Quartet. The Parisian Quartet performs works of Haydn, Debussy, and Beethoven en route to Carnegie Hall. Thursday, March 10th, 7:30 p.m., unioncollegeconcerts.org. Cowan's Auctions, accepting consignments of jewelry, fine art, historic firearms, American Indian art, historic items, and more. 518-396-7994 for appointments. The Montessori School of the Berkshires, sponsoring a community presentation, The Emotional Life of Children, March 11th at 6 p.m., berkshiremontessori.org/speaker. And Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass, European cuisine infused with flavors of the world. Northampton, Massachusetts, grab life by the knife and fork, vivafreshpasta.com.
The bad news is we're back for the final third of the program, which means...
What, that we're back or it's the final third?
Both. But we're back and we have, you know, this last third to go. There's one free phone if you want to get on it. Yeah, no, there are no free phones. And we'll go to Teresa in Schenectady, as promised. Teresa.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey. Hi.
Okay, here's my question. Back in September 2009, I published a piece on an online publication. That publication folded in 2014, and they said that anything that they did not hold on to would revert back to the original writer's rights.
And how do you know who they what they held on to?
Let me see.
Someone
they
called with the exact same facts a half hour ago.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I must have been somewhere else.
Yeah. They said that if you didn't receive an email from them or a letter, that basically, you know, your work was still, was you know, reverted back to your rights. A few weeks ago, I was Googling just for the heck of it, and I found out that my work appeared on another site, but it didn't have my name on it. It said by contributor, and it had the original date that it was published.
So this is the second time we've had this.
Teresa, somebody called with the exact same set of facts a half an hour ago.
Okay,
that's
so you
amazing.
Have to get this. You have to get Vox Pop online, and no. Go ahead, Paul. Very quickly, give a summary.
We could give a completely different answer.
Yeah.
Well, give a summary. Go ahead.
Okay. You should really just have it taken down. Contact the publication and tell them that, you know, you have the rights to this and that they should take that down, that's fraudulent.
I wish we knew the name of both of the websites, the original
one
and then the second, the offender.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But and if they don't, then you should probably register the copyright and then maybe contact a lawyer.
Like Paul.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we're going to Mike in Saratoga Springs. Mike, you're on.
Hey, thanks for doing this today. I just have a quick question. My father went through one of those self-publishing vanity online sites, and is very dissatisfied. You know, the book has gotten really good reviews from people, and then people have said, you know, a lot of word of mouth. But my question is about the ISBN number. What, I mean, I think they registered it. So what happens now? It's his book, but what can we do if we wanted to retract that contract and just maybe try to do a more traditional route or just publish it ourselves?
When he signed up to do that, he signed an agreement, and you need to go back and look at that agreement and see what it has to say.
Particularly about the rights.
Yeah.
To the ISDN.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think you could just get another ISDN.
And what is an ISDN again?
It's the identifying number as a piece of merchandise, basically.
Right.
It enables you to sell it.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can get a new number.
I don't think so.
No?
No.
Yeah.
I think you have to look at the contract, because was it with Amazon?
Well, I mean, is it okay to say the website? Or
sure.
It's Author House.
Oh, okay. Each, you know, I think that the contract that Amazon offers has become fairly standard across the web-based digital self-publishing industry, and they have very specific terms about what you can and cannot do. I self-published a book through Amazon. Even though I purchased my own ISBN, I'm pretty much locked into them if I want to do a volume 2, which I'm working on. So, you know, I have a little buyer's remorse there, but such is life.
So, do what Polly said. Look at the contract carefully, see who owns what, and then perhaps talk to an attorney about what you could do, perhaps to
or talk to the people at the website
to get
and see
out of
if,
it.
If they'll transfer the ISBN to you. But
look at your contract.
What if you threw out the contract?
Oh, you can.
It'll be online.
It'll be online. They offer the same contract to everyone who signs up with them.
I see. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Right.
Good luck.
Let's go to Nate in Beacon, New York. Okay, Nate, you're on.
Hi, I'm the heir to the author of several books that have been out of print for I don't know, 2 or 3 decades for sure. And if I want to, I believe that if I want to take those rights back from the publisher to either go to another publisher or publish in some other fashion, I need to write them a letter. And then if they don't reassert their right by republishing it within a certain time, I get those rights back. Is that correct?
That'll depend what's in the publishing contract. And the different publishers have different. Some have no reversion of rights clause at all. But most have, you know, if you're out of print for X amount of time, the author can contact, you know, the publisher and say, I want the rights back unless you republish, and then they have 6 months to republish or not. Mm. But I would contact the publisher or whoever owns the rights now. It's probably, there were 30 years ago, there were 40 different publishers. Now there's about six.
Yeah.
So there, it's probably not the same name, although it might be. But I would contact them and ask for a reversion of rights and see what they say. Yeah.
Okay. There's one twist on one of the books, which was published by a publisher in the UK, which is out of business as of some years ago. So there's nothing left there, right? So is there anything to concern myself with that one?
Did they absolutely go out of business, or were they
just consumed by
another?
It seems that they were not. Yeah, it did not. From what I've tried to learn, I don't see that they were bought out and continued under some other owner.
I'd go ahead and publish it. Yeah, I would go ahead, and if you know, you've done your due diligence, and if somebody pops up and says we own it, then you can have a conversation then.
And also put your house in your wife's name.
Well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Good luck, Nate.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Karen in Albany. Karen.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
Good.
Good group.
Good. I wanted to record some songs, popular songs, a cappella on a CD, and not sure who I should contact for permission to do that. Is it the singer or the songwriter or both?
If they're popular songs, you don't need permission, but you do need to get a license from an organization, strangely enough, called the Harry Fox Agency. The website is, I think Harry Fox invented the foxtrot. I'm not sure, but I think he's the same guy. But there's a website called songfile.com that is run by Harry Fox, and you can actually go in and sign up and tell them how many copies you're going to sell, and they'll issue you a license. It's 9 cents per distributed copy, and then they have a handling fee on top of that. But they can't say no. You just go in and tell them how many you want, and they'll tell you what the cost is.
Well, how do they know? How do you know how many you're going to sell?
You
before
don't.
Before you sell them.
It's a big honor system, basically. I mean, I have one client that every year I said, tell me how many you've sold. And I go, you know, pay for the license, and it's really an honor system.
Oh, you pay post facto. You don't.
I for this client I do.
Yeah.
And it's probably, you know, they always take the money. They never say you're late. You
hey, know? Karen, name one song you want to sing a cappella.
Karen.
One of the songs I want to do is a song by a country singer called "It Was." Her name is Cheryl Wright.
I've heard of Cheryl Wright.
And it was popular in the 90s, in the late 90s.
Well, they'll probably be very happy that you're doing a recording and sending them money.
Yes.
Hey, Karen, thank you. Thanks for the great call. Appreciate it.
Right.
Thank you.
Wait, one second. Here, go
no,
ahead.
No, no, no.
Did you say something? You want to say something? No.
Are you all set?
Yes, yep. I never want to cut Polly off. Okay, let's go to Leon in his car. Leon, I hope you've got hands-free in your car.
Hands-free, I pulled over.
Oh, good.
Wait, I'm eating this marshmallow right now. One chocolate-covered marshmallow.
Very good for the radio. We all do it here.
I called in because you're talking about fair usage.
Wait. You can't do what you're doing. You have to turn the radio off and just speak through the phone, okay? Because it's a delay.
I'm talking just to the phone.
That's right. That's a rule.
You're talking about fair usage. Now, I was involved in a case. I made a film called When We Were Kings. It was about Muhammad Ali and George Foreman in Africa. It did very well.
Yeah.
Anyway, Turner did a broadcast, and it was called Ali, I believe, and it ran on it was Labor Day 2000, I forget when. It was running three parts, so my lawyer got a stop against them. They were using, I don't know if you saw one of the things, but they picked out seven of scenes, Ali on the road, no, I'm not there, I'm here, you can't follow me. They used that one, 7 seconds. They used seven scenes, total of 49 seconds. They opened up the federal court in White Plains to hear the case on a Sunday.
Huh.
The judge ruled against me and my lawyer, and I told Turner's lawyers, you guys have opened up a can of worms. I have colleagues that have used that ruling over and over again. And as you said earlier, if it has an I'm nervous. I've never called up before. But that because they were Ali clips and what Turner was doing, and it was an integral part of their story, they got away with using it.
Yeah, it was a new...
I was able to use it 2 years ago. I did something called Smash His Camera, and it was about paparazzi, Ron Galella. Mm-hmm. I was able to use ABC News, CBS News, you know, clips from each one of them with fair usage. My stuff is used. They've let it go much too far. And fair, you can get away with fair usage for almost anything.
Yes. Okay, stop right there. This is Moderator Allen. We're going to get him because there are a lot of people behind you there, Leon.
All right, go ahead.
Group, let's respond. Very interesting story, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, fair use is a big mess. I mean, people have said it's the most difficult concept in all of jurisprudence.
Well, if you have a chance, I'm going to get off. I'm sorry,
okay.
I'm hogging.
Thanks, and
see what the precedent is. It's when we were king.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Leon.
Bye, Leon.
Wow. Well, Bill and I had a big fair use deal yesterday.
Absolutely.
You know? I mean,
and you won a Bayser case, didn't you?
We scared them enough.
Well, it's a very interesting story. Bill is one of the best medical illustrators in the world, really, mm-hmm. and I'm not kidding about that. And he did a picture of a drawing of a penis, which is illustrating something called Peyronie's disease, which is people get crooked penises for overuse or whatever reason that it is. And you and one of the doctors took your illustration, right, and used it.
Yes, that's correct. Well, actually, it's been used all around the world.
Yeah. So that's not right.
Nope.
That's your work, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And it's copyrighted and all?
Absolutely, and registered.
Right. And your great lawyer, Paul Rapp, that's R-A-P-P, was your lawyer.
He beat them into plowshares yesterday.
I call this the curious case of the purloined penis picture.
Or the Peyronie's penis picture.
Yeah. Very interesting. Very interesting indeed. Okay, we'll go to Lisa very quickly. Lisa in Albany, go.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on, Lisa.
Yes, hi. Okay, here's the question. It has to do with old photographs. So if there's an old photograph of a sports team, any kind of sport, doesn't make any difference. The photograph's from like 1915, 1910, like that kind of thing. It's not an original photograph. It looks like it was taken from a newspaper, like a photograph of the newspaper, put in a little frame. But if that picture is somewhere in a book, now the book is a novel, so it's not a book about, say, football or hockey or whatever the heck it is, but there's an analogy that's going to be made later in the book relating to that something that happened with the sports team pictured in that picture politically. So the person's making an analogy later in the book. So the picture happens to be in the book, but it's not a book about, say, hockey or football. The point is it copyright infringement to even have the picture in the book, even though it's like from a newspaper from 1915 and 1910?
The date is important. You're in the clear.
Yeah, anything that was published before 1923 is going to be in the public domain.
Yeah.
And you can do whatever you want with it.
Okay, it's 1915. It says it on the shot. Even if it was on a cover, say.
You're fine.
You're fine.
And when you're
then the last question is, even if you're specifically discussing that particular team's political dilemma back in the 30s or 40s, even if you discuss it in some sort of note, you can do that and you're not... Because you're clearly then, you know, if you're selling the book by having this picture in the book, I don't want someone to say I made money off their picture. Do you know what I'm getting at?
But, you know, that's the picture is there for anybody to use. When it's in the public domain, it belongs to everyone.
Sure, and look at the
opus. 1915, I'm golden.
You're golden.
You so much. It's been weighing on my mind.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay. It's the kind of thing that will keep you up in the middle of the night, you know. Let's go to Dee in Saratoga. Very quickly, Dee, we only have a minute. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I just discovered about 2 weeks ago that a website
is offering a book that I published through a university press in 1995. They've been offering it for a month for free download. It's a picture book. The press owns the book. I own the pictures, and they're still current.
Okay, we got to get you an answer.
You've got to go to the publisher and get them to chase these people down. But
the publisher may have given the rights to like Amazon.
No, I ran into this recently, and the publisher didn't give the rights. I would start with the publisher.
Yeah.
Okay, because the pictures are mine.
Yeah. And, well, sometimes publishers do, and I've heard academic publishers especially, there are websites. And but if you own the photographs, they don't have the right to reproduce them online.
Go get them.
Thanks, Dee.
Thank you so much.
You know, guys, I've learned so much from you, as I always do here. I'm thinking about going to get my masterful book, Strengthening the Wisconsin Legislature, and seeing if I could get it to revert to me. There must be a lot of people who want to have it. Somewhere.
How many people are on your Christmas list?
Yeah, and that's right.
You could have make it into a musical.
No, make it into a premium on WAMC, don't you,
you
see?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, and a hand autographed, and then... My father had a first cousin. He lives in Kingston. He's quite old right now. He wrote a book called The Road to Normalcy. That's right. He's a psychiatrist. And I want to, you know, I want to see whether we can get our hands on The Road to Normalcy, because everything is explained there.
Go for it, Alan.
So thank you guys for, you know, for being here. Polly, one sentence each. Go ahead. One self-serving sentence.
Buttonwoodart.com.
Buttonwoodart.com. Paul Rapp?
You can reach me at paul@paulrapp.com.
paul@paulrapp.com. All right.
You can find me at westwoodmedical.com.
westwoodmedical.com. Westwood Medical is one word?
Yes, it is.
.com. Well, thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
I have nothing to say self-serving about myself. So, Polly just knows. What?
I'm shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
Okay, guys. Thanks so much for being with us. Stay tuned. You'll get some news and a little theme music, because we're just a little early.